Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
You're listening to Kathy is In with Kathy DeBono.
Everybody, welcome to Kathy is In, the Kathy DeBono Show. I'm Kathy DeBono. I'm here with my associate producers, Becca Cates and Jill Bennett.
Hello.
Hi.
And we're here on our first day of our new day and time, Thursdays at 2. So I hope everybody can get on board and show up on the right day and time. Thursdays at 2, guys. Well, that's Pacific time, 5 o'clock Eastern. So if you're in New York or on the East Coast, turn it on your car.
We don't know what Amsterdam time that is, though.
Amsterdam?
Someone tweeted me. I don't know. It's like 4 in the morning now.
She doesn't know what time it is either because she's probably stoned.
Yes.
All right.
Wow. Aging stereotype. Okay.
Well,
It's actually 10 p.m. I just Googled it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Google girl.
No problem.
If there's anybody who wants to Google anything, we have Becca here as the Google girl ready to check stuff out because we don't want anybody making stuff up. I was almost going to curse. Can't curse.
No, can't do that.
So we've been gone for a couple of weeks. We've been on a sabbatical. We haven't been here live, but we're back now. And Jill and I were in Maui for a couple of weeks, which was really nice. We were only supposed to be there for one, but we got rained out the entire week.
Right.
I was getting text messages from all my friends. They were seeing it on the news that Hawaii was having torrential historical. what were they calling it?
A state of emergency.
State of emergency.
On two of the islands because of all the rain.
Yes. Happy vacation. Here we are. We showed up exactly on time for it.
Yeah.
And the day that we were supposed to leave was beautiful, gorgeous, sunny day.
And I have to tell you, when I woke up that morning, I saw the look in your eye and I knew we were going to stay.
Yeah.
Because my lady, when she wants something, will not stop until she gets it.
That's true.
So we somehow worked out a way to stay for an extra 5 days.
Well, our sponsor had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
So shout out to Blagospot.
Yes. But thank you, Blagospot.
We got to stay for 4 days of sunshine and actually feel and smell and taste and see Maui the way it's meant to. And God, what a magical place that is.
Yeah.
The best way I can describe the feeling I have when I'm there is expansive.
Mm-hmm.
It's expansive. And I kept running out of the hotel room. I was like, bye, see you later. And I just go sit on the beach at night and stare at the sky by myself.
And you come back completely different. Like one of the things that, you know, but before I kind of have this Midwestern work ethic where I feel guilty about not going to work. Like I have this thing where I feel like I'm not being a good person if I'm not working.
Yeah, I have that too, only it's called an Italian mother.
There you go. And me.
And you. True. You're kind of a pain in the butt.
Thank you. But I realized, you know, after taking this vacation, how energized it made me feel and how much more, like I came home and I felt like I was bursting with creativity and ideas and that I had the energy to do it.
I'm not surprised. A vacation like that is really a rejuvenation of your spirit. I mean, there's your body, there's your mind, there's your soul. Mm-hmm. We can rest our mind by sleeping, taking a day off. You can rest your body by the same thing. But to rejuvenate your spirit, I mean, for me anyway, to really rejuvenate my spirit, a place like Maui just was like, it was like going to church. It was like going home.
Yeah, but we need to do it. Like Americans are notoriously awful about taking vacations. And like we take on average about 2 weeks a year, whereas people in Europe take 6 weeks off.
And they stop working at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
They don't start till 10 a.m.
They have balance in their life.
Yeah.
And we have none. We have no balance.
Working to live instead of living to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think Becca knows a little bit about this, don't you, Becca?
I do. I know a lot about that. What's a vacation?
Right.
I really don't know.
Well, you know, I'm just bringing that up because you worked yourself to the bone and it affected all parts of your life.
That's also true.
Yes.
She worked herself to the bone and it affected all parts of our life because she's our roommate. And mm-hmm. She went a little cuckoo banana nuts and we had to rein her back in. But we love her.
Thanks, guys, for broadcasting that on the radio.
Everyone knows what that feels like, Becca. Everyone does. But can we talk about who our guest is today? Because I'm really excited.
Yes, honey.
Today, we have joining us 3-time Emmy Award nominee, Meredith Baxter. What a wonderful, amazing person. I mean, I always knew she was a wonderful actress, but I read her book while we were in Maui.
I read her book as well.
Yeah, her book, Untied. And it came out, I think, late last year, but the paperback is coming out on April 6th. And we invited Meredith to come do the radio show, and she so graciously accepted. And she's going to be here with us after the break. But after reading her book, I got to say, I was always a Meredith fan, and then we worked with her on We Have to Stop Now, and even more of a fan because she's so lovely and gracious and wonderful. But after reading her book, the fan I am of the human being just far outweighs the rest of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I love when people are brave enough to share their journey through their pain, their struggles, their learning, their life. We all have stuff like that. And some of us are challenged more than others. And it was so amazingly brave of her to write this book and share all the things that were happening in her career off camera for this long, wonderful, amazing career she started in 1970 or 1971. And just reading her journey through that and her journey through self-discovery and realizing what was about her, what wasn't about her, what was about trauma, what wasn't about trauma, and coming to a place of awareness in her life now, just, I love her. I just love her. I want to keep her like a puppy.
Well, now, you got, how did you guys meet? Because you met Meredith, like, casually.
I was trying to remember the year in the car. It was somewhere in like, 2006-8-ish. And I was at a party, and I don't know if Meredith would remember this, but of course I do. And I was at a party, and she was there with Nancy, her partner. And we met, and I was having a drink and just sort of chatted a little bit about, would she consider ever doing an indie movie? Because, of course, I was plotting in my head.
Yes.
And I had this feeling when I met her that I'm going to work with her. I don't know on what level it's going to be, but I know that it's going to happen. So I started to try to figure out while chatting with her what it was going to be. And I thought, it's most likely going to be some indie film that I come up with and then chase her down for and ask her to work for me for free. And that's exactly what it ended up being. But I asked her, would you be into working on an indie film? And she said, I just want to work. I'd be into working. I'd work on anything. I want to work. And right there, I automatically had that feeling of, this is a really great human being who's an artist who likes to work rather than someone who needs to be a star or famous or all of those things that, you know, she is anyway, really.
Well, and then cut to a few years later when we have We Have to Stop Now.
Right.
And we found out the day that we found out she was going to be in it, we all jumped up and down and were excited, and then we all got scared, and we didn't know, like, if
we did,
you know, because
we invited her to the table read. We were like, you so don't have to come, you just have to show up on the days you're shooting. She was like, no, I'll come. We were like,
yeah, oh shoot, Meredith's coming. So now we're nervous, and we're
like, little apartment,
we're shooting in our apartment, we don't have a trailer, we don't even have a dressing room, and we're hoping that she is as nice as we think she might be. But then she was lovely and amazing and fun to work with, and hysterically, I mean, every time we have a screening of the movie, and we've seen it now, I don't know how many, like a dozen times in front of audiences, her scene gets the most laughs every single time.
It does. It guffaws. And in fact, when she shows up on the screen, people cheer.
Yes.
And I don't know if I ever told her that, but I should tell her that. But as soon as the scene opens and they see her, there's a couple of woo, clapping, screaming.
It's our favorite part of the screening is her scene.
It is, like, here comes Meredith.
And she's in it for, you know, this is like, you know, testament to her talent and her how much she's loved, is that she's on screen for, you know, we got her, we were lucky enough to get her for all of 5 to maybe 10 minutes of screen time. Mm-hmm. And it's everybody's favorite part. Everybody talks about it. Everybody asks about it. And she's brilliant.
She's brilliant.
So,
I think our community really, really appreciates her coming out too.
Yeah.
And her willingness. You know, she did our show before she came out. She agreed to do the show before she came out. And she actually mentioned it in her book. I was like, oh, look.
I know.
My name is in Meredith's book. She mentioned that she thought about it. You know, should I play a lesbian? She's like, well, I've played a killer.
Yeah.
I might as well play a lesbian. Doesn't mean I'm a killer. Maybe my privacy will still be safe. But then we invited her on the cruise, the Sweet Cruise, and she came with her partner, Nancy, and did another couple of tiny little bits for us on camera. And then that was basically the beginning of the next chapter.
Right.
For her.
And we wanted, because we were doing this low, no budget web series, and we couldn't pay Meredith anywhere near what she demands or should get paid, we thought we would try to make up for it by offering a cruise. So
do we need to break?
No, we have a minute and
Okay. I'm ahead of myself.
Yeah, you are.
I'm very excited.
You just want to bring her right on, don't you?
I know, I do.
So we brought her on as a way to thank her for being a part of the production.
Right.
And then
cut to us in my manager called to
right.
warn me of what was happening for Meredith, because Meredith right. and I shared a manager at that time, quite coincidentally. And she called to let me know that when we got back from the cruise, Meredith was warned that a bunch of people had taken photos of her there and they were going to out her. And they were going to do it in God knows what way. But I just think people are so... That just really upset me.
Yes.
That they were going to do that. That anyone in our community, knowing what it's like to be a part of our community, that we wouldn't band together and, you know, be on each other's team rather than just
right.
go out there and sort of... I don't know what they thought. They'd get money for photos or something. I don't
right.
know. But she took matters into her own hands and handled it very graciously and with a lot of class.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're going to bring her on, and
we are.
Maybe we can get into that a little bit if she wants to talk about it.
Yeah, and I have she brought a couple of books here and an audio version of her book. We're going to have her sign those. And anyone who signs up as a Twitter follower today, or through the week rather, Twitter and Facebook, if you come find me, CathyDebono, one Twitter follower and one Facebook follower, get an autographed book, Untied, by Meredith Baxter. And we're going to go to commercial now. We'll be right back.
Licensed psychotherapist and coming out specialist Cathy DeBono is now available to provide the counseling and coming out support that you need to take this vital and necessary step. Cathy now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use Instant Messenger or communicate through an email exchange. With Kathy's help, you will thoroughly examine your unique life circumstances and create a plan that is tailor-made for you. For more information, go to kathyisin.com.
Lucky Dog Leather jewelry collections feature the hottest leather accessories around. At Lucky Dog Leather, we offer a wide variety of handmade leather belts, wristbands, and some of the coolest bracelets you will find anywhere. We custom make every piece to order so you get exactly the style and fit you've been looking for. Our original designs have been the choice of Star of Dexter, Michael C. Hall, American Idol winner, Lee DeWise, and the voice finalist, Vicky Martinez. Go to LuckyDogLeather.com. And set your cool free.
Blogspot.com is a topic-oriented language translation service. Our translators are highly qualified and experienced in a wide variety of subjects, including legal, medical, technical, financial, and more. Languages include English, Spanish, Italian, French, and many others. If you can't find the language you're looking for, please contact us. We offer personalized quotes tailored to your needs and budget. Go to blagaspot.com and get your free quote today. That's BLAGASPOT.com. Blagaspot. We're up to interpretations.
We're back. Welcome back. I'm not going to waste any more time. We have with us in the studio the lovely Meredith Baxter.
Hi.
They did.
Meredith, come right into your mic.
Okay.
There you go.
That better?
Yes, that's much better. Right. So thank you for being here.
I am so jazzed to have been invited. Thank
oh.
you guys.
Oh, yay. And thank you for doing our little web series.
Yes. Thank
that
you so much.
That was so much fun. And it was funny, because I got to listen to what you were, all those neat things you were saying about me, that I didn't realize that the cruise was a sort of a thank you. I just thought, oh, you need me. You need more of me in the show.
Well, we did.
Oh, we did.
Well,
Believe me. I mean, it was twofold for us. I mean, we wanted to get you as much of you in our show as we could, but we also wanted to be able to do something nice for you because we couldn't pay you what you're worth.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we won't go into how much I'm worth. But I was so excited when you invited me on the cruise. And I went home and I said, I want to tell Nancy. And I said, oh God, because I was really excited and I thought, okay, I really want to do this, but I didn't know Nancy had a work commitment and I didn't know she'd be able to do it or if she'd be interested in doing it. And I told her and she said, I want to go on a cruise.
Yay!
Yay!
Oh, so it was so much fun.
Well, I think we were with our production team when you either called or texted me. I can't remember, but when I got the message that you accepted and you wanted to come, we were all like, da, da, da,
well,
da,
what
da,
we did
da,
immediately,
da, we were so happy.
If I think we were with Anne who wrote the script,
right.
And we were like, Anne, and she goes, I'm on it. Like, we didn't even have to, she's like, we're gonna write as much as we can. We're going to get her for as much as we can, but we didn't want to use and abuse you. I mean, we wanted
you to be able to use that as a vacation and not have to work.
But we would have used you every day had we had the option to do that. So.
Well, I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Oh, we love that. Do you hear that, potential investors out there? If anyone wants to see it, We Have to Stop Now, season 3, which I think we're going to do as a feature this time.
Yes. And we've already decided you're going to be one of the regulars without even speaking to you.
We would love to do the film. Look at this. We already have Meredith Baxter. You heard it here.
She's attached.
Yeah,
she's
attached. That'll get you a ton of money.
You'd be
more than you'd know. More than you know. I want to get to the whole coming out thing. I don't want to. There's so many wonderful things about you that I want to talk about before we let you go today. But when you just said, "Oh, that'll get you a lot of money," do you realize how much the lesbian community loves you? Have you picked up on that yet?
I think I have a filter that keeps me from feeling that because it's scary. But I will say I have been so welcomed.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, in the most loving way. I've been thrilled and really, really grateful for that.
Yeah. And well, do you know how many women about my age or maybe a little bit older, you were just their crush?
Yeah.
You know, with family ties?
I thought I was their mother.
No, well, for some folks, yes. Some folks of a different age, yes. But for a lot of women, you were their crush.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what to do with that.
I know. I just think you should know that.
Well, I remember getting...
I know, she just turned pink. How cute is that?
When she went to Dinah to go promote, and we weren't there, but you were there, and you graciously promoted We Have to Stop Now a little bit for us, and I saw the photos of the lines of women waiting to meet you.
Yes.
And Suzanne was like, oh my gosh, she was like, it was like the Beatles. And I was like, I hope that you got to feel that after going through, you know, this process.
We told Suzanne you were going to be on the show. She nearly died.
Yeah.
She was so excited. I know you guys are buds now.
Yeah, yeah.
But she just went into it. Oh, my God, Bridget loves Bernie. You don't understand. I was in love with her. I mean, she was just so excited, but we were all happy.
Yeah.
It was really fun. So, all right. I want to talk about your book.
Okay.
As I said in the first segment, it really just, I mean, if I didn't love you before, I love you even more now, because you really, your book almost felt to me, although you were telling us the stories of all of the things that you'd been through, it almost had a flavor of a confession behind it. Almost like you were saying, these are the things I went through, but this, I'm going to own my part in it. I'm going to own the ways in which I was responsible. And I almost felt sometimes like you were a little bit hard on yourself.
I don't know. I don't have a point of view of that, but I think a couple of things were at work with me. You know, I always had a difficult time with the idea that somebody thinks they know me,
right?
And you know what I think they thought they what I projected that they thought they knew was the life as an actress and what it's like to be in the limelight and to go and be in movies and stuff and. All that is going to jobs. That's going to jobs and going home. I was never part of the movie Hollywood community. I was never on the A-list. I just never did that stuff. And so I think that, and they think that people thought that I had a charmed life. And it's not that I wanted to just, I wanted people to know the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, no, this, you know, people are not who you think they are, that there's something real underneath, and everyone goes through the same basic bowl, just everyone's, you know, they just take different avenues, and that I didn't want anyone to make assumptions about me.
Yeah.
So I think that's what I wanted to clear up.
When did you turn that corner and decide that was important? Because I actually have, you said something in your book that made, here it is, all my life I've been reticent and had a fear of being known. That was actually something you wrote in your book. And I thought, well, wow, what a difference now to write this book and say, I think it's important that I'm known. What had you turn that corner?
Well, a lot of it is the whole idea that it's something that comes through sobriety is that we're as sick as our secrets. And I was so used to, trying to keep people at a distance. I've never had many close friends. And I think I just wasn't a friendly type, and that I didn't know how to reach out. I had too many blocks, and consequently, I was afraid about being, I didn't want anyone to get close, and then I was afraid no one would get close. So I had all of that going at the same time. So when I got sober, I heard the whole idea of the willingness to be known and to open up your life and not harbor these secrets.
Right.
Which, the contortions we go through to present ourselves as the way we'd like you to see us.
Right.
Because that's safer than if you knew us. And I just got so tired of all that.
Right, right. Yeah, like you said, it's sad and fatiguing to think back on the degree of self-centeredness I suffered.
Yeah, because it's all about, my headlights are all on me when I'm that way.
Right.
I'm not saying, what's going on with you, Jill?
Yeah.
I had that. Uh-uh. I didn't want you to know anything about me. So this was a big turnaround. And it was like, okay, the last secret I had to give out, as far as I could think of, was coming out as a lesbian. And even that my family knew, and some people close to me knew, but the general public certainly didn't.
Right, right. I remember around that time you were like, I didn't think anybody cared.
Well, that was basically, and there was a truth that who has to know this stuff?
Right.
It's no one's business. I remember the night before, I think the night before we left for New York, I was at Suzanne's house, and I said, you guys were there, and you were being so lovely and so supportive and saying how important it was. And I was going, it's not important. It's just my life, and no one is going to care. And people are going to think this is some sad, desperate attempt to revitalize my career by coming out as a lesbian. I'm the only one who ever thought of that.
Right.
Clever, gambit. Now everyone's up to it.
Right, right. Well, we're the cool kids.
I think that's true. And, this is the truth is that this is the first time I've ever been part of a community and actually chose to try to stay here. It's like, I'm leaning into it.
Yeah.
And I feel comfortable with it.
Yeah. I can almost feel your effort. I can almost feel the conscious effort to know I'm going to stay a part of this. I'm not going to unplug, because unplugging is the safe place for you,
mm-hmm.
right? Just unplug. And this is probably something that you learned as a child. In Meredith's book, she goes into all of this. Your mom was an actress, mm-hmm. and at a particular age, when you were a child, she decided she really needed to give that career her attention and her focus. And she asked you to call her by her first name, and there was no more calling her mommy. And if she went into her bedroom and you needed her, you were not allowed to knock on the door. You had to wait for her to come out. So she got very self-focused on her career and what she wanted to do. And you said something in your book about, I can't find the quote right now, but you said she just decided to have like a do-over, that she wasn't going to be a mom anymore, that she wasn't going to be a mother. I'm going to put my life on pause and now I'm going to do it over. And she just had you kids call her by her first name, and it was all of a sudden like you didn't have a mommy.
Well, we were introduced as her sister and brothers. People didn't know she had children. There were no photographs of us.
Now, Meredith, how old were you when that began?
I think I was about 5.
How did you, do you think that this is possibly when you started to just unplug to find your safe place? Because if your mom is unplugged from you, what do you do? Oh, sweetie, I love you so much.
Sorry, this is my place. This is the hard place. I think I decided that somewhere in, as we do, we think it's our fault. So I thought she didn't want to be my mother. So consequently, I was unloved, and I was unlovable, and that became my truth, and the entire trajectory of my life was dictated by that belief.
Mm.
So that's, I developed my belief system. What's yours? What's getting you through life? Well, of course you shut down, because you don't want anyone to know you then, because they're going to find out just how awful.
Right, because my mom knew me, and she decided to pull away.
Right. And here's the sad thing. I'm a 64-year-old woman, and talking about this makes me cry.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's sad, but and this is one of the reasons that talking about it, I was hoping that, you know, writing about it and talking about it, it will get it out of my system, so it's not something that affects me so totally. I should be over this. Do you know?
Yes.
And you think, hey, God's sakes, that happened when you were 5. You've been carrying around this around for almost 60 years. Isn't that enough? But when that's what shapes you, and because I didn't talk about it and I never had any other belief system to replace it, those were my underpinnings.
Right.
Not conducive to great self-esteem, or it doesn't put you with good people.
Right.
Because you think, you know, I met and married someone who didn't think much of me, and I didn't think much of me, and he, you know, kind of discounted me and ignored me and put me down. I said, well, that's kind of what I grew up
this,
with. Well,
this fits.
That's familiar. I know how to do that.
I know how to do that. Yeah.
I know who I am. I knew what was expected of me, so it wasn't hard to get into that. And that right there is, that's the pattern of, putting yourself into domestic violence situations.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Okay, we're going to be right back with Meredith Baxter and talking about her book, Untied.
Licensed psychotherapist and coming out specialist Kathy DeBono is now available to provide the counseling and coming out support that you need to take this vital and necessary step. Kathy now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use Instant Messenger or communicate through an email exchange. With Kathy's help, you will thoroughly examine your unique life circumstances and create a plan that is tailor-made for you. For more information, go to kathyisin.com.
Lucky Dog Leather Jewelry Collections feature the hottest leather accessories around. At Lucky Dog Leather, we offer a wide variety of handmade leather belts, wristbands, and some of the coolest bracelets you will find anywhere. We custom make every piece to order so you get exactly the style and fit you've been looking for. Our original designs have been the choice of Star of Dexter, Michael C. Hall, American Idol winner, Lee DeWise, and the voice finalist, Vicky Martinez. Go to LuckyDogLeather.com. And set your cool free.
Blogspot.com is a topic-oriented language translation service. Our translators are highly qualified and experienced in a wide variety of subjects, including legal, medical, technical, financial, and more. Languages include English, Spanish, Italian, French, and many others. If you can't find the language you're looking for, please contact us. We offer personalized quotes tailored to your needs and budget. Go to blagaspot.com and get your free quote today. That's BLAGASPOT.com. Blagaspot, we're up to interpretations.
We're back. We're here with Meredith Baxter talking about her book, Untied. And we were just talking about how, you know, an event at the age of 5 can really serve to pretty much mold our personalities in the way that we move on into the world. It's where we first start to learn who we are, how we should be treated, how we are. You know, our only frame of reference is our parents, and we assume that however mom treats us is right. We don't even consider asking ourselves if mom is wrong. It's right. It's, you know, mom made that choice, so this must be the way it should be for me. And you know, we were talking about Meredith learning that at a very young age, at the age of 5. And I read your book. I wished I could swoop in and steal that little 5-year-old and tell her how cute and lovable she was. But that just doesn't happen.
Kathy kept saying after she finished your book, she just wanted to hug you. She just, like, all day, she's like, I just want to hug her. I just want to hug her.
Well, that's who I had been looking for all my life. Someone to just hug me. I was thinking about that the other day. You know, occasionally I reflect back on stuff. Because I was not a reflector at all as a child. I never asked myself, am I happier doing this or happier doing that? Do I want to be in my mother's house or my father's house? I just want someone to pay attention to me. And so I think that's what went through my whole life. I was always looking for somebody. Do you like me?
Right.
You know that book, Are You My Mother?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, are you my...
I actually thought of that while reading your book, too. I
really?
Was like, it's like, are you my mother? Yeah, because you know, anyone who gave you that focus and attention, even if it was negative, well, that just must be what you're looking for.
Yeah.
It's at least this person is finds me enough of a value object to focus on me, even if it's negative. Yeah. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was at 17, you had a suicide attempt. Mm-hmm. And you were away from home, and your parents came to get you. And
no, my mother.
Your mother.
My mother came.
Just your mother, yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought that they were said, pack yourself up, and I was sending you home. And I went downstairs, and they said, well, your mother should be here soon. And it was like, what?
Right.
My mother's coming to me?
Was that powerful?
I could cry again right now. The whole idea was like, she'd never made any move to me. What do you mean you're coming here? You're flying to Michigan from Los Angeles to take me away? So that was, I didn't understand it. I didn't, you know, although I do think it was a big bid for attention and just an escape. I wanted the pain to stop. I was so lonely. So when she came, it was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I didn't know, you know, but are we going to maybe talk?
And that didn't happen.
No.
That was the thing that blew me away about it. A, that such a fundamental mom maneuver of coming to pick up her daughter when she's in trouble landed on you as such an exponential amount of effort, number one. But number two, I think you wrote, it was never spoken of again.
Never.
How is that possible? Coming from an Italian family where everything is spoken of. I don't know if we were taught that you do that or if it's just
cultural.
What we do. I was like, how can something like that happen and not be spoken of? What were the cues that told you, I'm not allowed to talk about this? How did you know not to talk about it?
Well, we weren't a family that talked about anything. There was no conversations. I mean, I'm not really making it up.
I believe you.
There was just no conversation.
I absolutely believe you. I'm trying to grok how that. So she picked you up and never said, Meredith, what happened?
I have to leave open the fact, possibility that maybe I don't remember something. But what I remember was sitting on the plane, and she sat next to the window and looked out the window, and I remember sitting there, kind of just looking at her, waiting for something to happen, and nothing happened. And this is all in the book, that when we got home, there was a conversation with her and my stepfather, Jack, about, like, what are we going to do? And my brother was brought home. For some reason, he is standing there in the middle of the room saying, talk to her. Just talk to her. And they wanted to send me to a psychiatrist. And so I wound up going to the psychiatrist. Mm. And there was never any conversation about it. You know, in truth, I think my mother didn't know what to do.
Of course.
Well, having never established a relationship with me, what she's going to start at now?
Right.
After the suicide, I think she was just totally ill-equipped.
Right.
To deal with any of that.
Right. And so often situations like this are just someone who's ill-equipped. They're not someone who's evil or wants any harm to come to their child that they're effectively neglecting. Really, right. It's just someone who hasn't become aware the way you have. You know, at one point in your book, you said you started to reflect on your children. Something you wrote that really hit me was, I understood that my absence had more power than my presence. Mm-hmm. And I thought that is the key for stopping a cycle like this. It is the understanding that the absence has more power than your presence, and knowing how to make sure you don't make them deal with what you dealt with. Had you not become aware of that, you know, you'd have your children now dealing with the same issues that you're dealing with. But that's the way we sort of heal that over time.
Well, we heal that, you know. So what I did was, I was the anti-Whitney. I did everything. You know, I was at every pancake breakfast, every track meet, every swim meet, every soccer game.
Oh my God, the story of you running next to your daughter while she was...
Well, you know, there's another story that I never put in there. When my oldest boy, Ted, was at Dartmouth, he was his first year at Dartmouth, and he was on the track team. And I was there. I flew over there. I was at the meet. And I sort of did the same thing I'd always done at all his Brentwood school meets, his local school meets. And I was kind of there. And but it was a full track and field meet, which I had never really been part of before. So I didn't know that several things were going on at the same time. So I was in the middle of the track at the field. And they start the race at one side, and I go, okay, Dad, go! And I go running across the other side so that I'm going to see him at the other part of the loop. So I guess to cheer him on some more. But as I'm running across the field, I hear someone go, oh, my God, watch out, watch out, watch out. And whack, into the ground goes a javelin. Right behind me, I was like, what the heck? What the heck's that? And I realize, of course, they're doing javelin and discus, you know, and I'm just like across the field because I
crazy
am
crazy woman running through the events.
Yeah, and I
she's
thought this
super
was
mom.
So great, you know, actress impaled at a track meet. you know, picture the headlines.
What she won't do for her career.
Another stupid career move.
Oh my God, that's hilarious. Tackled that's by a so long funny. Jumper. I love it. But the image of you when your daughter was doing that run and running through the running through the woods in your shoes, carrying your purse.
Sandals.
And
a purse. I think she hated
she broke the cycle, though. That's the important part.
Yes. Yes.
She broke the cycle.
Well, the pendulum swung the other direction, all the way to the other direction on that one.
Well, you know what we do is we don't do the same thing our parents did. We make other horrible mistakes.
Right.
You know, and so, and here, because I desperately wanted a family. I wanted to live in a family where you called the mommy, mommy, and you called the daddy, daddy, and it didn't matter if it was their real daddy. You know, I married my second marriage. You know, they had Ted and Eva, my oldest kids, had a perfectly serviceable father. We were divorced, and they saw him periodically. But because I needed my core family to look the way it was supposed to look, I made them call him Daddy.
Right.
And that put them in a horrible position. But they did it because I was saying, oh, here, go give this to Daddy. Mm. Well, what did Daddy want? Did you ask Daddy? Because that was my need. What then they had to do was when their father came and he'd say, he'd hear them say goodbye, Daddy, to the guy I was married to, that created all sorts of problems with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they never wanted to look like they were having a good time with us because, gee, the real father was going to have, feel torn and divided. And, you know, we just create horrible problems every time we turn around because we don't know. We're doing the best we can.
Yeah. Well, there's a saying in when I was in grad school that there's a theory, and I can't remember who the theorist is, but the idea is there's obviously no perfect parenting to be had, but the idea is to be a good enough mother. That's all you can be, is good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
The theory of the good enough mother. And, you know, attempted, well-intended, you know, all of the things that I'm sure you were is the good enough mother. And then our kids have to grow. I say our kids like I have any. have to grow up and then figure out what they learned from that. And I think so part and parcel of that is looking at our parents' behavior and figuring out what made them who they were. Because that gives us a lot of answers as to why it wasn't about us.
That's true. And that's really was the pivotal thing that I had to deal with. I had to go back and look at my mother. And in doing this research for the book, and to have discovered the depth of her desire to be an actress gave me a whole other look at what was going on for her. Because she was invested in that. I don't think she really wanted to have kids. You know, and certainly not three, one after the other, where each one is 16 months apart. So she had no downtime. And I was like, what?
Right.
Because she was so young herself.
Yeah. So you got to understand, the perspective of just any way in which it wasn't about you.
Yeah.
Is really the important thing.
Because I'd made it all about me and my own self-centeredness all my life. And that's been my big push to let's not make it about me. It's hard, too, because it is so seductive.
Yeah.
And I am so fascinating.
But even that, like you use the term self-centeredness, and I guess technically and on paper, it's right. But it seems to come with a little bit of judgment on yourself. Like, how could you not have been self-centered? You were a 5-year-old kid. Someone had to center on you.
And why not me?
Sure.
I was the natural choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone had to take care of you. And you, obviously, in looking for the reasons why you felt unlovable, you were staring at yourself all the time, trying to understand that and trying to hide it.
And you know, that self-centeredness in that way too, and always trying to look at my, okay, who's going to care about me? Who's going to care about me? I think that's very much what was operative in going through, you know, dating guys after guy after guy. this isn't great. No, that's it. I'm not happy here. No, well, I'll go with him. Okay. And, you know, it's whatever, without going, wait a minute, Meredith. You know, because that never happened. I never had that kind of introspection. It never occurred to me that I was a lesbian and I would find happiness with women.
Right.
And
well, it would occur to you later.
Yes, it would.
We have one more break. We'll be back with more Meredith Baxter in a second.
Licensed psychotherapist and coming out specialist Kathy DeBono is now available to provide the counseling and coming out support that you need to take this vital and necessary step. Kathy now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use instant messenger or communicate through an email exchange. With Kathy's help, you will thoroughly examine your unique life circumstances and create a plan that is tailor-made for you. For more information, go to kathyisin.com.
Lucky Dog Leather Jewelry Collections feature the hottest leather accessories around. At Lucky Dog Leather, we offer a wide variety of handmade leather belts, wristbands, and some of the coolest bracelets you will find anywhere. We custom make every piece to order so you get exactly the style and fit you've been looking for. Our original designs have been the choice of Star of Dexter, Michael C. Hall, American Idol winner, Lee DeWise, and the voice finalist, Vicky Martinez. Go to LuckyDogLeather.com. And set your cool free.
Blogspot.com is a topic-oriented language translation service. Our translators are highly qualified and experienced in a wide variety of subjects, including legal, medical, technical, financial, and more. Languages include English, Spanish, Italian, French, and many others. If you can't find the language you're looking for, please contact us. We offer personalized quotes tailored to your needs and budget. Go to blagaspot.com and get your free quote today. That's BLAGASPOT.com. Blagaspot. We're up to interpretations.
We are back, guys. We have Meredith Baxter with us just for a little while longer. Thank you for being here. This is so much fun.
I've had a really good time so far.
Would you come back another time?
Yeah.
See, I ask her.
How's this? I'll just stay.
Okay. I ask her on the air so she can't turn me down. And,
it's very manipulative.
It is very manipulative.
But effective.
So, of course, we have to get to the part of your life where you do realize that you're a lesbian.
Yeah.
And you come out. Now, I have questions for you about this that I imagine other people have probably already asked you. And the first one is, along your lifetime, mm-hmm. while going through all the things we've been talking about, has there ever been a moment where you had a crush on a friend that was a girl?
Yeah.
Or you noticed a poster of a woman who was sexy and it caught your eye? Or were there signs along the way?
If I go back and look now, where I can see how I was always drawn to androgynous-looking women.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say, okay, that was a sign. I had a crush on a girl in high school who had, she was the antithesis of me because I think of myself as bulky and stringy hair, and she had dark, bouncy hair that kind of moved as she walked. I thought, she's so great. And she had a fabulous name, which I can't say here because
right.
you know, obviously she still exists. and there's a girl I used, but maybe all girls did this when I was about 13 or 14, I used to make out with.
Oh.
But it was always like, this is how people make out. But it wasn't because
sure.
she was a
right,
girl.
To prep for boys.
Yeah.
yeah.
And
right.
a lot of girls do that, but do you remember feeling like, I like kissing her?
You know, here, I didn't feel a lot.
I see.
You know, and I don't know how to explain it, except I just didn't.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. You know, and I remember having, when I had sex the first time, it was, Jesus.
Yeah. I felt that way, too. I didn't know what the big deal was. Sex with a man, I mean.
Yeah, and I was like, I had no patience, I didn't connect. He was a really nice guy, but
right.
you have to do this.
I understand.
And some of the compulsions after that were always to just be seen. Do you see me? Is this okay? You know, yeah. want me?
And so how does this all come to fruition in your life now and in your relationship now? The things that we've talked about, you know, dealing with being neglected as a kid and all of the things that you found were developed in your personality and how it predicted your relationships and how you looked for relationships and how you behaved in relationships, how has that changed now? Or if it hasn't, in what ways are you still grappling with those scars?
Well, I think in probably the what I struggle with the most is making sure that just because I think something is going on doesn't mean it's going on. Because
Amen.
Invariably I'm, and I will talk about this with Nancy. Hi, baby. I hope you're listening. I think it's when I will, in some, without knowing it, ascribe an agenda to her or a meaning that I'm thinking is going on that, you know, resonates from past damaging relationships, whether it's, you know, a marriage or as a child, it doesn't matter. And then, because I'll have a reaction to that, and because Nancy and I go to couples therapy too, my job, which I'm not really good at, is to say, you know, I just had a reaction to this, to something that went on. She's much better at saying, you know, I think something happened here. You want to tell me what happened? And I'll go, nothing.
God, slap.
Why? I don't know why you're saying that. And I think it's just, you know, that's when I, you know, when some button is pushed and I regress and I'm not able
right.
to be as present as I'd like to be. But my goal is to, and I do achieve this sometimes, is to say, you know, this is what it felt like when you said this. I felt like you were really judging me here, and she'll go, okay, let's talk about it.
Right.
And the great thing that we have learned together is to listen.
Mm-hmm.
To listen, not to what I think she's saying, not to interpret it through some, you know, not to be thinking about something while she's talking. I have to repeat back to her
right.
exactly what she said.
We do the same thing, Meredith.
Yeah. Isn't that hard sometimes? Like when you really, your instincts just want to fight, and she's like,
yeah.
Can you repeat back what I said? Yes, you just said you didn't mean to. Da, 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 da,
yeah,
da.
You didn't mean.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, well, that was healthy and very healing. Yes.
You just said it when you mean right. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful to be with a woman who doesn't have exactly the same damage I do. You know, if we both did, we'd be really screwed, probably.
Well, yes, so you complement each other's damage.
Yeah, we, you know, we have some abandonment stuff,
right.
but, you know, usually we're not sick at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, so there is at least one person is healthier than the other at any given moment, and, you know, I really appreciate the strength I feel.
Yeah.
In my relationship to her, because I'm totally current. I don't have any secrets, you know. And you know, I think back in my marriages, it was like there was nothing that wasn't a secret.
Yeah,
I didn't want anything known about me because it was a target.
Right. So you have real intimacy in your life now.
Yeah, and you know, and I didn't realize that that's what intimacy
exactly.
was. Exactly. And it's just being okay, whatever you need to know. That this, you know, I'm open to it, and I will tell you the things I don't want anyone to know.
Meredith, thank you so much for being here. We just ran out of time, which makes me sad.
Oh,
but we did.
Thank you guys so much.
Meredith's book, Untied, comes out in paperback on April 6th. And everybody, come follow me on Twitter and Facebook, because I have some autographed copies here of Meredith's book that I'm going to give away to anyone who joins Twitter and Facebook, CathyDeBono. I'm going to do a raffle with one Twitter follower and one Facebook follower, and you're going to get an autographed Meredith Baxter book. We love you, Meredith.
Thank you, guys. You better have me back.
We will.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? I would love to have you back.
Okay.
All right.
Next week's guest is Wendy Parr, who is a vocal artist, a teacher, and she also runs a camp for kids that uses music for therapy. So that is next week. And remember, it's at Thursdays now.
Thursdays, 2 o'clock.
2 p.m. Pacific Standard.
Or 10 p.m. in Amsterdam.
All right, guys.
All right. Thanks for being here, guys.
Planning that.
Bye.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.
a wrap.
Musician Deborah Davis.
Outside, no more, no more. Thought the 10
Hey everyone, you're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Don't touch that dial. We'll be beginning a brand new show at the top of the hour with one of our amazing hosts, Transformation Talk Radio. Talk radio to change the world.
Licensed psychotherapist and coming out specialist Kathy DeBono is now available to provide the counseling and coming out support that you need to take this vital and necessary step. Kathy now offers her services through private sessions over secure online video chat or voice-only phone calls if you prefer. You can even choose to use Instant Messenger or communicate through an email exchange. With Kathy's help, you will thoroughly examine your unique life circumstances and create a plan that is tailor-made for you. For more information, go to kathyisin.com.